Of my talk, just in order to include some recent stuff which I've done here. And I'm not restricted today to cross boreholes, so I will give some other examples as well, which might be quite interesting to you, I hope. And but cross borehole will be one of the examples which I will present. And I'd like to thank one of my collaborators here at UBC. These are Elder Taba, Doug Oldenburg, Uri Asher, David Arulia. So we have something like a small image. It's a small group called Image, which is sponsored by some consortium, and they're doing very interesting and lots of inverse problems. So it's really an exciting environment. And can you see so, or should we lower the light? Okay, so I will talk about shape reconstruction today, using level sets, using adjoint fields, and I will give you three different examples how you can apply it. This one is what I announced in the title, the Helmholtz equation. I did some work here at UBC using 3D Maxwell's equations in low frequency. So I will show you some examples there as well. And some of you also are interested in the linear transport equation. So I will also give some, as I believe, nice examples about the transport equation and about optical tomography. So what is it all about? So the shape reconstruction algorithm which I want to present is a combination of a so-called adjoint field technique, which was, as I believe, mainly developed in Münster, Germany, Frank Natura, Frank Wibbling, and many students, one of them being me, have worked on this. A combination of this technique with the level set technique, which many of you might know, which was pioneered by Sethian and Osher. And nowadays there are many people working on this, on this application, on level sets. And you always need a fast and efficient forward solver, which of course depends on your application. I will give you some examples. So you want to use all this in order to solve an inverse problem. Now, Larry has given a small overview about how you address nowadays inverse problems. Typically, inverse problems are, in real-world problems, they are nonlinear. Yeah? They are ill-posed, heavily ill-posed, and you have to regularize somehow. So, which means you have to start with some assumption about your model, which you're actually looking for. And Larry has also pointed out that usually what is done is you use Tikhonov-Phillips regularization, assuming some smoothness of your function and so on. The question is, of course, is this always the best thing to go or to do? Yeah, and it turns out that quite often you are not really looking for something which is smooth. You might be looking for something which has sharp discontinuities. Yeah. And often, so yesterday we had a meeting with some people from mining industry, and it turned out that often they actually know more or less what they are looking for, yeah. Or what they need is something like an extent, the shape of what they are looking for, the volume. If they want to drill a borehole, they want to know where can I drill the next borehole in order to to get into the stuff which I'm looking for. Or if you're thinking of environmental imaging, yeah. There is something, a plume of some pollutant in the earth. You know the characteristics. You know what it is. You know the chemical. It might have been leaking out of some tank, right? And you're just interested in finding out where is it right now. So do I have to worry? Does it go to the groundwater, for example? So these are typical problems where it is not necessarily the best idea looking for the smoothest solution, saying, using Tikhonov-Phillips regularization and so on. And these applications, it might be a good idea just looking for a shape of something, and the chemical or whatever you are looking for most often has a very high contrast, which makes the smoothing property algorithms even worse, because typically they cannot give you a high contrast. So that's why you might start thinking, so why not looking for the shape? So I've told you this shape reconstruction algorithm is a combination of three different powerful techniques. The first technique is an adjoint field method. I do not know whether you are familiar with this technique. Many of you have solved inverse problems, and you have somehow used an adjoint operator, maybe in the form of a back projection operator, or maybe in some other forms. If you do conjugate gradients, some adjoint is involved. So the adjoint is somewhere, everywhere. So one technique which also uses the adjoint heavily is this adjoint field method. The basic idea is typically real-world problems have a huge dimension. You want to reduce the dimension somehow in order that your computers actually can do something with it. Yeah, this might be because you have lots of data. This might be because your model is very large, but always some PDE is involved, in particular if you have a nonlinear inverse problem. Yeah, you have to solve PDEs many, many, many times. And then you have to calculate huge so-called sensitivity matrices, which you do not want to do. So the idea is of this adjoint field technique is don't look right at the huge problem itself. Take sub-problems of this huge problem. Divide your problem into smaller problems and address each of these smaller problems individually, separately. So how do I select my smaller problems? Typically what is done, this is the second component of this adjoint field technique, in a clever way, of course. Yeah? You want to exploit some structure of your problem, of your rule of the physics, let's say, and of your forward solver, which is always somehow involved here in nonlinear inverse problems. So you group your huge problem into sub-problems, and you do it in a way such that you can easily address the sub-problem. And easily means, in our case, by just doing one forward run and one adjoint run of some PDE solver. This can be any PDE you can imagine, in principle. This can be a Maxwell's equation. I give you an example, a Maxwell's equation. This could be a Helmholtz equation, a linear transport equation, or whatever you are thinking about. So these sub-problems typically... since you make not use of all the data at the same time, they are underdetermined and so on. And if you want to this is an iterative algorithm. If you start with some initial guess, what you're interested in is an update, a correction to this guess, which brings you closer to your solution. And so that's what the algorithm is doing. It calculates a correction. M is called M the model. M is a model. And whatever, this might be a permittivity, this might be an absorption coefficient, this can be whatever. You have some data, and R is the residual operator. It just maps a model to the data, the real data, minus the data which correspond to your guess, which you are just looking at. This is a mismatch in the data which you want to reduce. And what I've written down here is just a generalized solution of a underdetermined problem. Yeah, R prime is a Fréchet derivative. Yeah, so you linearize around some guess. You calculate the Fréchet derivative, and then you do an update step into the direction of this minimal norm solution, but only for a sub-problem. So what do you have to do practically? Practically, you have to calculate the residual for the given problem, for the given guess. You do this by just solving one forward problem. This might be a Maxwell problem, a transport problem, whatever. You run a forward solver on your best guess, and this gives you calculated data. You take the difference to the real data. This is R of M, M being the model. You filter your data. This is operating on the data space. I will not say much about this operator. Think of it as a filtering step. And then you need the adjoint of the linearized residual operator corresponding to the best guess. It is, in principle, solving an adjoint problem. And in many cases, you have to solve actually an adjoint problem. You will see there are ways out if you, for example, are looking for Maxwell's equations or Helmholtz equation. You can replace it by solving just another forward problem. So that's what you have to do. Solve a forward problem, filter the residuals, or solve an adjoint problem with the residuals actually attached at your receiver positions as adjoint sources. You backpropagate these residuals into the medium by which is just what this operator is telling you. You can do the math, you will find out. And this gives you the correction. So let me show you a figure. So I do not want to do all the math here. It's a blackboard. Many of you have seen this, yeah? It's a very general idea. The Devaney backpropagation algorithm works similarly. Back projection is similar. And the whole idea is similar to the ART algorithm, where you also have this back projection step, right? So you do your forward problem. You have a source, only one source, because you only look at the subproblem. You do your forward problem, and I will be talking about shape reconstruction, which means you store your data at the boundary of the shape. At some point, you will need something like the shape derivative or something like this, which is a Fréchet derivative for the shape. So you solve your forward problem. You evaluate your field at the receiver position, but also at the boundary. You call the boundary value U of S. S is a shape. So I've written it for the Maxwell problem. I will use it the same for Helmholtz for transport. Next step, you take your data, which you have gathered. You take the difference, and for Maxwell, you have to phase conjugate them. For other problems, you have to do something similar. This is a filtering step, and you do some more filtering. Whatever you do, the next step would be you backpropagate these residuals, these filters residuals, into the medium, and you evaluate these fields at the boundary of your shape. Call it Z of S. Now, since we are looking for shapes, and we are starting with an initial guess for a shape, we have to propagate, we have to change the shape, yeah, because we want to have it finally at a hopefully correct position. So what we have to do is, so how do you propagate shapes? You can, for example, just apply a velocity function, f of s, to the boundary of the shape. So you define a velocity function, f of s, at the boundary of the shape, such that if you propagate your shape according to this velocity function, it's in the normal direction. If you propagate the shape, you decrease your misfit in the data. That's the basic idea. So how do we find a velocity function such that if we propagate the shape according to it, we reduce the misfit in the data? So you have to do some mathematics. You can calculate this. It turns out you need the solution of your forward problem and the solution of your adjoint problem evaluated at the shape positions, and it's a certain function of it. Typically, the product of these two of them, or some convolution, or something like this. It's just a little bit of mathematics. It's not much. It's very simple, yeah, using some Green's formulas. And this gives you the velocity function. So you do that, and this propagates your shape. Well, that's very fine. Question is, how do I propagate my shape numerically? That's not an easy question. Some of you might know that in flame propagation or something like this, this is one of the basic problems. Yeah. So given the velocity function at the boundary, how can I propagate my shape according to this velocity function numerically? Numerically, what you have to do, you could do, for example, discretize your shape or your boundary by putting marker particles at the boundary. But then you might have a topological change. Yeah. So these two regions might melt together. So now it becomes complicated. Yeah. So the information about my topology, I have to store it somewhere. I have to double-check all the time. That was reason for Sesian and Osha about 20 years ago introducing the idea of a level set function. Yeah, doing nothing but using it for propagating shapes given a certain velocity function. Assume you have a velocity function f of s. You want to propagate a shape. Well, first, you just want to describe the shape by something. So the idea was, think of a two-dimensional situation. You have x and y. These are your two dimensions. And the z component here is an artificial component. It's not physical. So you define a higher dimensional function going into the z direction. And you say, you define your shape as being all those points where your higher dimensional function is negative. At one position, if this function is smooth, it will go through zero. You will have something which is called a zero level set. And this is the boundary of your shape. Where the function is negative, it is the inside. Where it is positive, is the outside. So that's how you define shapes. How do you propagate shapes? Very easy. If you change your level set function, your shape will change, right? So you have to change your level set function such that you change your shape. And you want to do it in a way such that the change in the shape corresponds to your velocity function, which you have given. Right? So that's what Sethian and Osha have done for many problems of flame propagation, crystal growth, and so on. And that's what we are doing more or less also. Our problem is here. The really difficult part and expensive part is calculating the velocity function, not the propagation. Yeah? But we need this technique in order to be able to model topological changes easily. Okay, so we need an update for the shape. So I will switch now to the examples and tell you what we are doing there. But keep in mind, all we are doing is calculating this delta F directly for the level set function. This delta F being nothing than what I have shown you before. It is a function of the forward fields and the backward fields. Here you see it again. Here. It's a function of the forward fields and the backward fields. This gives you the velocity function. And this directly gives you, by a simple formula, it's something like a Hamilton-Jacobi equation. So you can directly derive the corresponding update for the level set function, which gives you exactly this propagation of the shape corresponding to the velocity function. Okay, let's switch to examples. Let's look at cross-borehole tomography in 2D. This is this is governed by a Helmholtz equation. So I'll come back to this slide. I just have to get a picture. Look at this figure. So this is so we did this for people who are from national labs who are interested in tracking pollutants. Or let's say you have a gas station and there is a tank in the ground with gasoline and it's leaking and you want to see what is it doing down there. So you drill two boreholes, and then you're looking what is in between these boreholes. This is a situation. These dots here are sources and receiver positions in the two boreholes, and these are three obstacles which you want to recover. And the distance of these boreholes is about 10 meters, and the wavelength is something like between 2 and 12 meters. So you have wave propagation. But it's not really high frequency in the situation as in seismic imaging. It's you really can model the waves with finite differences and so on. And going back to Helmholtz equation, that's a model which you can use, or which you should use in 2D. What people are looking for is a dielectric permittivity, epsilon of x. It's hidden in this constant of the wave equation. So what you need in order to do this, so we used different frequencies and so on, a certain amount of data. What you need is just a forward solver for Helmholtz equation. Yeah. So I used some MATLAB solver, which was written for some people at Northeastern University, and used some nice, perfectly matched layers for artificial boundaries and so on, absorbing boundaries. So let me show you what the algorithm is doing. So the first step was finding a good initial shape. I will not talk about this. What I did is just applying an adjoint field algorithm which is similar. So I used the data. You can use Born approximation. I used a few sweeps of an adjoint field algorithm to find nothing but this initial shape. Yeah, this gives me an initial guess for my shape. And the level set function you have envisioned, you have to imagine this has one more dimension. And what you see here are those parts of the level set function where it is negative. That's written in blue here. And what you cannot see is the background is discontinuous. It's inhomogeneous. So the yellow shades here are slightly different. So it's an inhomogeneous situation. You have a limited view. You have noise in the data. Quite a lot of noise, actually. Signal-to-noise ratio is about 10 dB. And it actually works. So that's what you start here with the initial shape. And then you do just nothing but forward-backward solver. And you end up with this. I mean, you have to regularize and so on. This is your final reconstruction. Yeah, you need some regularizing and so on. You have to do it carefully. It's not just starting and let it do. But if you do it right, it obviously works very well. It works not always. So there are situations if you don't do it right. So I use many frequencies in this situation, for example. If you just use one frequency, you might end up that you don't have the right data, as what Adel was telling about. If you use a certain number of data, but they are not right, yeah, it's not that's what you need, you get something like this or like this. Yeah. And this is a correct one, which uses the data of all these, the same data. But you have to do it right. Okay, these are different issues. The residuals are going down. Look at this curve here. These are the mismatch in the data. These are a few where it didn't go quite right. Yeah. So when we did something wrong, it didn't really work. Another example, a nice example. It's the same situation, but now we have boreholes all around. Yeah, so this is artificial. But this is a complicated shape. Yeah, it's not easy to recover such a complicated shape. The dots again are sources and receivers. That's what the algorithm is doing. And you see, there are topological changes involved. Yeah, so this blob here splits up into two blobs. Yeah, that's where level sets are important. Then you goes down here, 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 and finally ends up there. So you really can recover the hole in this house. Let's go to another example. 3D Maxwell's equations. So if you extend everything to 3D, it becomes more complicated. Your forward solver is much, much more slowly. But you still can do it. Yeah, these are Maxwell's equations in 3D. I'm looking now for the conductivity. It's in low frequency. You have no wave propagation, which makes the whole situation. The inverse problem is not that nonlinear, but it's highly ill-posed. Yeah, everything is diffusive. So think of a geometry like this. This is a typical geometry in applications. You have loop sources at the surface of the Earth. This is 200 times 200 meters. And what people are looking for example, minerals. Mineral deposits. You have these loop sources of a size of about 40 to 50 meters, 12 of them. And then you have something which you're looking for, and then in the boreholes, you have small loop receivers. Yeah, your data are integration of the integrals of the electric field over these small loops. That's your data. So nothing three components or so. It's just one component of the field. Actually, what I did numerically was this situation. A quite complicated shape with a similar situation, and I only use half of the data here. Yeah, this is what I try to recover. So electromagnetic fields, low frequency in the Earth, 1 kilohertz is the frequency. Size of this domain is 200 times 200 meters. And now you might want to go back what Adel was saying. What you need is a nice sampling geometry. So what I did, I threw away a few data. I didn't use these data and these data. I only used two or three boreholes per surface source. For a similar reason of what Adel Faridani had told you, sometimes less is more. This is the sampling geometry which you would get if you would have rays. You don't have rays here. You have clouds or something like this. But this is a direction of view which you would get, which looks quite nice, but it's few data. It's really few data. These are the results. So this is depth. So this is depth. 0 to 10 meter, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 40, 40 to 50. This is iteration number. This is the original object. Yeah. So this is what I would like to get. This is my starting guess, which I get from a pre-processing step, now, which also uses nothing but data. I assume I know the correct value inside the shape. That is always the assumption. Right now, I will relax it a little bit. And then I let it propagate, yeah, according to the algorithm which I have presented. And it actually gives me a very nice reconstruction and approximation to this T-shaped function. And if you take into account that the fields are diffusive, you cannot expect of getting a T back. Yeah, so sharp corners is impossible with a diffusive domain. But this is a very nice reconstruction because you can, even though you can somehow guess that it might be something like a T. And this is full 3D. Yeah, so this is a 3D reconstruction. Now you might say, Well, what happens if I do not know the value very well? Let me first show you the residuals. Residuals are of course, going down. Residuals are going uphill. So what happens if I do not know the value inside the shape? I tried this. Well, now, instead of 0.5 Siemens per meter, I use 0.45. It still works. You lose a little bit, probably, but it still works. So you get a good approximation as long as you are more or less close to the value which you need. I didn't check how deep or high I can go. Here I used a higher value, 0.55. It goes a little bit. Here you can imagine it might be a T. Here it's going a little bit worse. It also depends on your initial guess and on the actual calculation. But in principle, it works. So the residuals are going down all the time. You might believe me so. Okay. Finally, I would give an example in diffuse optical tomography. This is another application. So diffuse optical tomography is a very new imaging tool in medical imaging now. It is governed by a linear transport equation. Yeah, you have a time-dependent linear transport equation. So what it's similar as X-ray tomography, the physics behind it. You just have scattering as well. You have lots of scattering events. So your X-rays, if you want to think in terms of X-rays, are scattered around quite a lot. This is the equation which you have to use. This is your scattering integral. It models the scattering. This is your X-ray part, more or less. It models straight propagation. A of X would be what you are looking for in X-ray tomography. It's the absorption. B of X is the new parameter, which is the scattering parameter, the scattering power of your medium. And in principle, you also have to reconstruct that simultaneously. Right now, I'm looking only for A of X. You need, for every PDE, you need some initial conditions and boundary value conditions. Do not want to go too deep into those. Here again is the physics. So you have a laser. Typically, you use a laser in the near-infrared region. Yeah. So this is just below the red light region. So your photons are traveling like a random walk through the medium, and at some point you have a light sensitive receiver, and these are your time dependent data. You have what you are looking for is maybe a tumor in the breast or a hematoma in the head of a person, and I would like to show you. So there is a big group in London actually who is doing this. They are looking this near infrared light. It's very sensitive to hemoglobin, to the oxygen saturation of the blood in the brain, for example. So they want to. It's difficult to see, but they built a pilot experiment here. So a machine with a small helmet. I will show it to you, and they want to see whether this baby has enough oxygen in order to survive in the brain. This is a. That's where you. This is a typical application here. To build a helmet, put light through it, and look for oxygen. Now, what happens is the rays in X-ray tomography, which for example Adler was talking about. This is a typical ray in X-ray tomography. I calculated it with a transport code. Yeah, I call it now a sensitivity function. Yeah, instead of rays, you get something similar. You get clouds. This is what you are dealing with. That makes the situation, the resolution you can expect is much smaller, much lower, because you do not have the rays anymore. Everything is something that looks like this. So if you do some back projection, you have to do it according to these figures, according to these clouds. Even worse, in this application which I have shown you, there are clear, so-called clear layers in the head. Where light is traveling like rays. So you have both. You have rays and you have diffusion. The diffusion approximation is a good approximation to this high scattering transport equation. So your sensitivities look more and more complicated, and that makes it difficult to recover anything. Once again, some data here. But now I would like to come. You need an initial guess. So you use again an adjoint field solver for the initial guess. But I won't directly go to the reconstructions. So I start with an adjoint field solver with a regular inversion routine. I'm looking for the absorption. These are the clear layers here, this blue one. And these are my data. There are 16 sources and receivers on at the boundary of this domain. That's not much. And so you can, so the coloring is not good here. So you see that my pre-processing step gives me something which looks not too bad. Then I switch to level set, this shape reconstruction algorithm. And this is my initial guess now. And so very quickly, actually, so just one sweep. So I just have to use the source, all the source, so the data just once. You get already something like this. Actually, what I printed here is after five sweeps. Let's see. After five sweeps. Okay, yeah. And here it needs a little bit more. But nevertheless, you get a very nice reconstruction. This is really very nice because of this clear layer which surrounds everything. It's really difficult getting through it. So here again, just use an approximate value. Does it still work? It still works. You get something which looks very similar, yeah? Your initial guess is the same. Now you use an approximate value instead of the correct one. It gives you something which looks... It gives you the information which you are probably looking for. So there is... here I have embedded a few more clear regions. Sometimes you have even some clear regions in the medium here. It still works. So... Now, slightly, yeah, so you see here, I use approximate value with the clear regions to get it back. And, I don't want to show you. Even if the three objects have, all three of them have a different parameter value, which is the case here. These three objects of the true medium, have different parameters, 0.6, 0.5, 0.4. And I run the algorithm with 0.4, with the smallest one. Yeah, do the initial guess, and then let it propagate. The final result is this. So this, with the correct value, is actually recovered quite well. And so here, for example, the value of the actual medium is higher. So you might imagine that it's somehow clear that the region which you recover is a little bit broader. Yeah. So that's what you actually would expect, and that's actually what turns out to be the case. The residuals go down very quickly, actually. So you are very quickly at a good first guess, you see it. And then, so here you are very quickly at something which is close to the reconstruction. And then if you run it and run it and run it, you get closer and closer. Yeah, this, but the... you might want to stop at some certain specific point here. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So that's what I would like to say.
Question. Some algorithms that involve finding approximates or roots and that kind of thing are critically dependent on the initial guess. You haven't said too much about your... formulating your initial guess, and I'm wondering how sensitive it is. And say in that last example, if you just put a blob in there for your initial guess, would there have been any problem?
Well, I never tried that because that's not my intention. My intention is using the data to get a good first initial guess. And I'm not cheating.
Too much about that process,
though.
Pardon? Oh,
this is the same. It's an adjoint field method. It uses the same... It uses the same algorithm. You use it forward-backward solvers, and instead of updating the boundary, which means calculating a velocity function at the boundary, you do the update all over the region. Yeah. So this is an art algorithm, but a nonlinear generalization. I use it in all three examples. This gives me some. It's a nonlinear shape, nonlinear reconstruction algorithm, which you can use by itself if you wish. This gives you a smooth version of your domain. Yeah, so it's a regular nonlinear inversion algorithm. And this, if that does not work, then I'm doubtful whether the shape reconstruction would work then, because then your data might not be sensitive to what you're looking for.
Yes.
Yeah. So typically what you get is a good first a blob at the right position.
Yes.
And that's a good starting point for the level set.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks.
Just a question about the adjoint field method. I'm just not
right.
Familiar with it. And I wonder if you could tell me, is it a method that gives you an exact solution, or do you use that the formula that you showed within an iterative?
It's an iterative scheme.
Okay.
Everything is iterative, yeah. It's nonlinear, iterative, And it's just the idea to this,
so something like local linearization or something like
that.
Is it local linearization or something like that?
I mean, you can compare it maybe with the Newton type methods, right? But it has a different derivation. It comes from the algebraic reconstruction technique in X-ray tomography. That's the background. And then the question is, how can you generalize this to deal with nonlinear problems? Yeah. So ART is actually for linear systems, this algebraic reconstruction technique. So that's what we are doing, is we take a subproblem, linearize it at the guess, and go a certain step according to this linearized version. So we do one update according to a specific rule how to address this smaller problem. But this is an iterative scheme, and there are linearizations involved. Yeah.
Any other questions?